you're in the 06010.
Hey, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. It's Tuesday, March 30th. Field Yates, along with Stefania Bell. How are you?
I'm good. Good. How are you guys?
I'm starting to get the hang of this Zoom podcast thing. Matthew Berry, hello, my friend. What is going on?
Dude, it's an exciting day.
Why is that?
Because I'm talking to my buddies. Oh. I'm talking to my buddies, Stefania and Daniel.
Ooh, wow. What does that make me?
My son.
I feel like it's important to have a good father-son friendship, though. Is that not in the
It's important to be friendly to your son, but you also have to be a father figure.
Drop the hammer every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. You got to carrot in the stick.
Sure. Carrot
in
the stick. I'm not familiar with that phrase, but I'll take your word that it is a real phrase.
But I think you're not familiar with that?
I'm not, Stefania.
It has to do with reinforcement of behavior. Do you reinforce with the carrot, the positive, it's a goal, or the stick, which you would, get hit with the stick? So that's a negative reinforcement. So do you respond to the carrot, like the treat, or the stick?
I'm a carrot guy. Yeah.
I know you are, because that's the kind of person you are.
Well, Daniel, you've been my producer for many years. What do you think I am?
You're definitely a stick kind of a guy. I actually just looked up carrot and the stick metaphor. It came about in 1342, which makes sense based on Matthew's timeline.
Yeah, I was going to say, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Exactly. What was the initial use of it, Matthew? When was the first time you heard it?
The carrot, it is an old timey phrase. It's actually an old timey phrase. The actual meaning of it is,
it comes from
when they were training horses, and the idea is that you would hold out a carrot for the horse to chase the carrot. You would hold out a carrot with a stick, or you would hit them with the stick, right? You would either,
I get it. What was it like the first time it was utilized in 1342 when you guys were having, porridge for breakfast?
Well, I just turned 13 and my parents got me my first horse. So it was exciting. I was finally able to go down the road to the store and get some penny candy.
They took you down to the stick store and they were like, all right, Matthew, you can take any stick
some
here
licorice,
in the stick store.
Yeah, right, let's get into some
penny candy. But in all seriousness, it's good to see everyone. I feel good.
Okay, good. I'm glad to see you as well. We've got a couple things to get into on the show today. So there is some stuff that we think has fantasy relevance, but we covered so many names. If you haven't listened to last week's podcast, go ahead and check it out. A lot of the free agent relevance names that have signed so far. And there are just a few more that could move the needle, but let's be clear. Most of the action took place in the first week. So we got a couple of stories to get into that maybe don't have direct fantasy relevance, but could have some tangential fantasy relevance. And as of right now, we're recording this at around 11 a.m. on Tuesday, March 30th. 17 games has not been official by the NFL and the NFLPA, but the owners are voting on a 17-game schedule this week. And let's be honest, they're going to play 17 games starting in 2021. So, Matthew, I'll start with you. There is some fantasy ties here, like an extra week potentially of playing games.
Yeah, so I think there's two sides to this. And Field, as our intrepid leader and host, tell me which way we want to attack this first.
Sure.
Number one is that I think there is the real life impact, how it impacts players, how it impacts how we draft, how it impacts fantasy football strategy just within the game itself. Because now there's, potentially, is there going to be an extra bye? Will teams rest players in week 17 and 18? Does it just all move back 1 week? Right. So I think there's or with an 18-week season, and a 18-week season, 17-game schedule, do teams say, do players get individual bye weeks? Even if NFL teams only get one bye week, we're going to give you a load management week here in week 7 or week 10, even though maybe their bye was week 4, that kind of thing. So there's that piece of it. Mm. And then the other piece of it here, Field, is in terms of for commissioners – setting up their league. If you're listening to an offseason podcast, which you're doing right now, chances are you're into it, right? And so there are, I'm sure, thousands of commissioners listening to us right now that are thinking about rule changes potentially for their league in 2021. And this is something that's going to have to be addressed. When do you have the playoffs? How long do you do the playoffs? These are the kind of things that not Daniel, because Daniel's a terrible commissioner, but more commissioners that are really good, that are focused, think about.
I think my
because you're the commissioner of our basketball league and you do a very good job. These are the kind of things like that you would think about.
Yeah, my instinct on this, though, is the first part of what you discussed, like I hear you on all the logic there. I tend to think, though, that teams are going to say, like, building in bye weeks for a player during the season feels to me a little bit far-fetched. There's just way too much on the line for these coaches and general managers and even for the players themselves. Like, you know, the last thing you need is for some opponent you face that week to feel like you're slighting them and like not respecting them enough because you're resting your starting wide receiver or something. My guess is that, first of all, I think it's going to just be one bye week. It's not going to be two bye weeks. I think it's going to be basically the same thing it's been in the NFL for a long time in terms of 17 weeks, 16 games, just with one extra week tacked on. So I think the NFL teams are going to approach it a lot like they have the 16-game schedule. Remember, there was a time we had 14-game schedules. There was a time we didn't have bye weeks, right? Like, I think it's going to be a lot of the same. But the second half of it is interesting to me, how you set up your schedule in fantasy football. Spine, what do you think?
Well, I felt like Matthew was going to say something there.
Matthew was going to say something, but then I realized that would be rude, so I stopped.
Oh, what a gentleman.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, old dog, new tricks.
The one thing I
was just going to say, you can teach old dog new tricks.
Now that you've passed me the ball, then fine. I'll take another shot here.
And same old dog.
Divine, you can react to what I'm about to say. My only thought here is, and this leads into Stefania very well, is I'm with you, Field. Like, do you see the load management just, hey, literally we're just owning it and a star isn't playing the way that sometimes you see it, like with LeBron and other big stars in the NBA? Or do I think that? No. But do I think that teams might err a little bit more on the side of caution? Like, I remember, like, I don't think this was last year. I think it's two seasons ago. But Derrick Henry missed a week 15 game where he was a little banged up. Like,
right.
And they said,
That was because no matter what happened in that game, the week 17 correct. Game was going to dictate their future. Correct. So, it was resting him in week 17. It just happened to be a week 16 scenario.
But I'm just saying that, like, if a player's got a little bit of a tweak of a hammy, how many times have you heard this or Stefania say something on Sunday morning where she's just like, listen, if this were the playoffs, this player would play. But, you know, the team's going to be cautious here. The team wants to be smart about it. They feel really good about the backup blank player that they have. So expect him to maybe play a few snaps or not be active today. Like, Stefania, could you see teams, you know, being a little bit more cautious in terms of those borderline guys? Because we know this is what you do every single week. The guys that have the hammy that are limited in practice on Friday, that, you know, that tweak something here or there.
I think it's really going to depend on where these teams stand. You know, we just gave the example of Tennessee where the only thing that mattered was what happened in week 17. I think it really depends on where they stand as they're looking at the playoff picture. One of the things that's going to happen is that there's going to be fewer preseason games as a result, right? So that the shift is really going from these multiple and last year was an anomaly, right? Because we didn't have any preseason games. But I think what you're going to see is fewer preseason games and this extra week during the season. So they're basically shifting that load. I think where it's going to have an impact is injuries at the start of the year. Because we always see a spike around 2 weeks in. So after, you know, like in the first 2 weeks of the regular season, in addition to what happens in the preseason, with fewer preseason games, and last year with none, we saw a spike in injuries right around week two, if you guys will recall. And I think that you're going to see something similar happen with this shortened preseason play, and it's going to jumble things at the start of the year. But how it ends up impacting the late season, I don't know that we can really tell yet.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree to disagree with Matthew. Like, I just don't think teams are going to approach their schedule any differently. Like, there's just simply too much at stake. Now, if a team has the one seed wrapped up with 2 weeks to go in the regular season, then yeah, you might see 2 weeks of rest. But because of the fact that there's only one bye now, and because of how many good teams there are right now in each conference, I just have a hard time believing that teams are going to have multiple weeks where they are resting starters at the conclusion of the season. And I got to be honest with you guys. At first, I was thinking about the second side of this, which is the how it impacts our schedule. Does anybody else feel like all you got to do is just make your regular season 1 week longer and treat week 18 of the regular season now like we would week 17? Like you just push the playoffs back to 15, 16, 17 as opposed to 14, 15, 16? Isn't that simple, Matthew, or how would you do it differently?
So here's what I would do. So I will tell you, let's see. So ESPN, here's what ESPN standard leagues are going to do.
Okay.
Which is if you just sign up, you don't do anything. You just sign up. ESPN standard leagues will basically move back 1 week. So their playoffs will start week 15. And it will basically, it is similar to, you know, they always do it's the 2 week playoffs. So in a standard ESPN 10 team league, four teams will make the playoffs and the playoffs will start week 15. And the semifinals will be weeks 15 and 16. And the finals will be weeks 17 and 18. So that's what ESPN standard leagues are going to do. You're asking me what I would do. And so for me, I would do a hybrid of that. I don't love playing in the last week of the season for all the reasons that we know. Although I think that the adding an extra playoff game and having only one bye helps alleviate that somewhat because it feels like there's more teams that feel like they have a chance to get in. So maybe there's less resting of starters in that last week. But what I would do is with this extra week is I think this is great. So that the push-pull was always like, if you want the two-week playoff, which I like the two-week playoff, because it's always like, listen, you have a great team all year long. You absolutely crush it. And then you get to the playoffs and you play a guy or a woman that has Alvin Kamara. And you're like, how am I supposed to compete with six stupid touchdowns? Like, I've had the best team all year long, but, you know, the person I'm playing just ends up getting a crazy record performance. And so I like the two-week playoff because I think that's a truer, you know, it's a two-week sample and you get a better sense of who should move on. The problem with the two-week playoff previously was that it forced you to either start the playoffs a week earlier, which is no fun. You want the regular season in fantasy to last as long as possible to give people as much chance and, you know, to compete. But it also forced you to or to use week 17, which is not ideal. So for me, in leagues that I run, I will suggest that you keep it the same. You start your playoffs in week 14, just like we're all used to. But then you go to a two-week playoff. So playoffs are – the first round is weeks 14 and 15, and the finals are weeks 16 and 17. And then week 18, you just don't play. So that would be my suggestion is – start the playoffs when you normally do in week 14, but have 2 week playoffs. Otherwise, if you're like, it's got to be one and done. I'm a purist. Then I do think you move it back to week 15 and you go 15, 16, 17 and leave week 18 out of it.
As someone who was on the wrong side of the coin for the Alvin Kamara six touchdown game this past year in a few different leagues, like it stung, but I live with it, right? Because it could have just as easily been me. The tables could have been turned. And I personally prefer the one-week playoff only because, I don't know, I just feel like it increases the drama. And that's what we live for in the month of December. Let's get to some trades because there were some major trades in the draft. And Stefania, we will kind of want to see what you're feeling about this huge 49ers trade. The 49ers moved up from pick 12 to pick 3, as everybody knows. They gave up the 2022 first round pick, a compensatory third round pick, and a 2023 first round pick. So three additional picks to move up nine slots, Stefania. What was your reaction? What were you thinking when you first saw this move?
I loved it. People can't see us, but I'm wearing my 49ers hat from the last Super Bowl because this is where I feel like we're headed. And I think that this was done with a win now philosophy. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch got together, looked at, you know, what they have on the team, who they're going to get back from injury, because obviously last year was devastating in terms of who they lost. Their big re-signings, like Trent Williams, Kyle Juszczyk, Jason Verrett, the defensive side, and they were comfortable with their rosters being win now roster. And it's interesting because yesterday was the first time they spoke to the media since all of this has happened. And I think it answered a lot of questions. There was a lot of speculation of, oh, they're doing this to move Jimmy G. Otherwise, why would they go so high for a quarterback? And I thought what Shanahan said was interesting, which is the fact that they have an offense that they know Jimmy G is comfortable with, that he actually went to a Super Bowl with this group. And yes, he needs to prove some things. And no, he's not necessarily a long-termer. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making this move. But for the upcoming season, if he comes back and is good in this offense, they have an offense that they are comfortable with, and having a rookie have an opportunity to work his way into. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be pressure on him to perform. Doesn't mean there won't be competition. Shanahan said that Jimmy G is better when he's a little bit pissed off. And obviously he doesn't love the fact that they're clearly going for another quarterback, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And he also said, of course, you know, they're always listening to trade offers if something came along, but Jimmy G has no trade clause. You know, it's very interesting. I think they took everything into consideration. They're very straightforward about it. There's not a lot of game playing. And I think some people are wondering, why did they make this move now? Why not wait, be a little more coy? I think their whole point was, we don't need to be. We don't mind letting you know this is what we're going to do. The time was right. Shanahan's quote was, they felt like they'd be left at the altar if they waited till number 12. They knew they had to move up. Obviously, we know that the Jags are likely going with Trevor Lawrence. The Jets, they clearly have a contact at the Jets and Robert Saleh. So it's not like they're going to be in the dark about what the Jets are going to do. And they felt like a guy that they want, that they would be comfortable with, is that going to be there at number three. And now the big question that everyone's asking is it going to be Mac Jones? Is it going to be Justin Fields? If you look at Mac Jones, he's more of a pocket passer. He's more similar to what Jimmy G does. And they feel like they are going to have enough offensive weapons around him to create a scenario where Mac Jones could be successful. But if you believe that Shanahan may want to make a departure and have a more mobile quarterback, then maybe Justin Fields or Trey Lance, North Dakota State. I mean, they have laid out what all their options are, and I am really comfortable with what they've done. And I just love the fact that since Shanahan came to the 49ers, one of the things we lacked before Shanahan and Lynch came in for a long time was transparency and a sense of direction. And one of the things that this pair has offered this organization is clarity, transparency, and direction. And, you know, as a fan, I don't think there's anything else you could appreciate more. So I'm good with it.
Very so comprehensive I have a couple and questions. Great breakdown there. What do you think, Matthew? Go ahead.
I have a couple questions. First off, Field, a question for you. Yep. What is Jimmy Garoppolo's contract at the moment? I know it's a no-trade clause, and I know it's
Jimmy
a lot
Garoppolo
of money.
Jimmy Garoppolo is due. I'm going to use a couple of rough numbers because there are some various roster bonuses and workout bonuses, but he is due about $25.5 million maximum in each of the next 2 years. So he is essentially on a two-year, $51 million contract with zero guaranteed money. And for the 49ers, and this is important here, ask the Eagles or anybody else about it. If he is cut or traded, he would incur just $2.8 million worth of dead cap space. So the 49ers can very easily get out from this contract if a great offer presented itself right now.
They can get out of it in 2 years, or they can get out of it now.
They can get it right now. Or next year.
They can get out of it now.
Yeah.
I think.
Next year.
So then I think it's like, Stefania, this is what's weird to me. So when you say, I think this move was made with a win now mentality, but then you're like, I feel like you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, and you're talking about it like from a 49ers fan perspective, which I get, by the way, because I mean, listen, I wear the burgundy colored glasses, but I'm just like,
no,
you can't say we're moving, we're trading all these assets to move up to three to draft a rookie quarterback, and we can get out of this contract with Jimmy G, and then also say it's a win now move, because it's not.
Yes, you can. Like, you absolutely can. Listen to me.
Stop it.
Because This team went to a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. And
so yet, why trade up?
Because are you going to let me answer?
After Stefania goes, I'll count.
The last 2 years, Jimmy Garoppolo can't stay healthy. He tore his ACL. He had this ankle injury that was problematic all of last year. And what did the 49ers do when they had depth issues before? They kept a million running backs. Why? Because they got burned with running backs being injured. They know Jimmy Garoppolo has a timeline, an expiration timeline. And if they're not going to hang their entire future when they have the potential to bring someone in, but they're not going to put the pressure on the rookie, like, you got to do this right now either. I think you can actually be a team who believes you can win now. Even if you don't have 100% confidence in your quarterback, you believe he's serviceable enough and has functioned in that offense to prove you can get to a certain point and yet still build for the future at the same time.
So I agree with Matthew. Let me just add one thing here. I think this might answer your question. I think the most obvious reason why this can be both a win now move, but also a move that has an eye towards the future, is that the 49ers reach an inflection point next year with their roster. Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, amongst the players, are going to be paid incredibly handsomely at their respective positions. Nick Bosa might be the highest paid pass rusher by next year, right? If he returns to form. Fred Warner might be the highest paid linebacker this side of Bobby Wagner. You just re-signed Trent Williams to a $20 million per year contract. You've got other high-priced players. At some point, carrying 3 to 4 or 5 guys at or near the top of their respective position ranking in terms of salary, plus having a quarterback on a big deal, is just not palatable. So what they're able to do is keep their roster intact this year, where they feel like they could win this whole thing with Jimmy Garoppolo, but also maintain financial flexibility for next year when they were going to have to make some really difficult decisions. And it's a lot easier to acquire a quarterback when you don't need one than when you do need one.
Amen. And so few teams do that, and it makes no sense to me. And that's actually one of the things that I appreciate about what this group is doing, because how many teams are we looking at where they're like, oh, they need a quarterback, they need a quarterback, then they go and get one. And all these rookies that then end up being the guy, not everyone can be Justin Herbert and step into the moment and have success right away. You know, people are already talking about where the Dolphins going to move on from Tua, which to me was crazy talk, because you hadn't even had an opportunity for this kid to really get his feet wet in football, especially coming off a major injury. And the expectations, I think, on these rookie quarterbacks is so ridiculous in terms of bringing a Super Bowl to a franchise within like a year or two, that why can you not be a team that is forward thinking, even if you have somebody who's serviceable at the position?
Listen, I think that's fair. And I think I can feel your explanation makes a ton of sense. So I get that. I think the concern here is that it is very rare. It is very rare in today's NFL that a quarterback drafted in the first round, let alone a quarterback drafted in the top 5, does not play immediately. That is very, very rare.
It is.
So there's going to be pressure on the 49ers front staff, the front office, the coaching staff, to put him in there, especially if Garoppolo struggles at any point and or gets hurt. Which Stefania, as you've noted, has happened often in his career. And then you've got a rookie quarterback trying to run Kyle Shanahan's offense, which is hard. Kyle Shanahan is a great offensive mind, but it is a challenging offense. And you think about Matt Ryan and his MVP season, where he's talking about the fact like, yeah, it took me 2 years for me to like sort of kick in and get this. And that's Matt Ryan, who's an elite level quarterback who'd been in the NFL for a number of years. And now you're asking, you know, whether it's Mac Jones or Trey Lance or Justin Fields or whoever, you're asking that kid to, I don't know.
All the more reason to have them be tutored in the offense for an extra year. You just made the point.
I want Stefania to have the final word here, but I just want to offer like 3 final thoughts myself. One is that, like, speaking generally, speaking very honestly, I have 0 clue what the 49ers are going to take. I would 100% be interested in Trey Lance the most. He's the North Dakota State quarterback who needs at least a full year of seasoning, I would think, or close to it, I should say. He's played 17 total college games. Second thought is that no matter who they take, my general thought and philosophy is that I trust Kyle Shanahan to develop that quarterback. And the third thing that I will say is that there are certainly ways in which this could blow up in the 49ers' face, whether it's they draft a player who doesn't develop, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo plays so great and they've got what the Packers are dealing with right now, who knows? But I admire teams that operate with conviction. So I think this move, at the very least, is one that I appreciate the process behind it. Stefania, I'll give you the final word before we move on to the second half of the big trades in the draft a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I would just say it's really just to reiterate what I said at the beginning, which is I think this duo of Lynch and Shanahan has been very straightforward and transparent since the beginning. I don't think they're being any different this time. I don't think they're offering any guarantees, but I think they've laid out a plan for execution of what they intend to do. And I would compare their moves and their conversation about their moves to any other GM coach duo in the league. And you show me another organization, you know, there aren't many that have said, this is what we need. This is what we plan to do. And this is how we're going to execute it as well as they have. And look, I think it's good for the players on the team because I think they feel like they've been honest. You know, they may not like it. Jimmy G may not like what's happening, but can't argue that they've been honest. And I think the fan base appreciates it. And yes, speaking as a fan, in addition to, you know, being a fantasy analyst, you do appreciate when you feel like you have an understanding of the direction the organization intends to take. And then you live with that. Mistakes might be made, but you appreciate that you understand it.
So I'm going to move forward here to the second trade that took place just after the 49ers trade. So they moved down from 3 to 12. Sorry, the Dolphins moved down from 3 to 12. They subsequently used one of the picks acquired from San Francisco to that pick, I should say, number 12, to move up to number 6. So they traded their own 2022 first-round pick. So they still have San Francisco's to move up from 12 to 6, which means the Eagles move back from 6 to 12. Matthew, I'll start here. What do you feel is, or what was your initial takeaway to this? And this one actually, I think, might have some fantasy relevance because I think both Miami and Philadelphia are very compelling landing spots for whether it's Jamar Chase, Kyle Pitts, Devontae Smith, or Jalen Waddle. At least one of those two teams would really benefit from one of those top four pass catchers.
Yeah, I think so. To me, the biggest indication here was, and like, you know, it's the NFL draft, so anything can happen, but I thought this was great for Jalen Hurts. But you know, look, you know, I'm a big Jalen Hurts fan fantasy wise. I think he's going to have a monster fantasy year as long as he's the starter. You know, he was a guy that was a top 9 fantasy quarterback over his final 4 starts, both in total points and points per game. Guy averaged 52% completion percentage. It was brutal. And yet still was averaging over 20 fantasy points per game. So Jalen Hurts, the concern on him, the knock on him, if you will, is, well, they got Carson Wentz there. Well, we took care of that. Carson Wentz is now a member of the Indianapolis Colts. And then they're like, well, they might trade somebody. And they might draft somebody. And they still may draft somebody. But feels like if they were going to draft a quarterback, if they felt like, hey, we don't believe in Jalen Hurts and we're going to draft a quarterback in the first round this year, feels like you're not moving back from 6 to 12. Now, might there still be a quarterback at 12? Of course. Right? We just don't know. But this feels like given knowing how top heavy sort of the draft is going to be in terms of quarterbacks, feels like if you wanted a quarterback, your better bet, your safer bet is to stay at 6. So the fact that the Eagles trade back to 12, to me, I think is another sort of point of emphasis for Jalen Hurts as the starting quarterback of the Eagles this year without real competition. Well, I think he's got a 1-year tryout, and I think if it doesn't work out this year, the Eagles will be back in the market. But my expectation as we stand here today is that Jalen Hurts will be the starting quarterback of the Eagles without any real competition, and I think he's going to be a top 10 fantasy quarterback. To your point about pass catchers, though, absolutely. Like, the Eagles have Dallas Goedert, they have Jalen Reagor, and not much else. You know, they found a little something in Travis Fulgham last year. We'll see what happens with Zach Ertz. It seems highly unlikely that Zach Ertz is back with the Eagles next year. As we wait,
I don't know anymore. Yeah,
to resolve.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know anymore at this point. I sort of doubt whether he will get traded.
I know. I mean, he wants to be released. They want to trade him. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
But it's obviously it's not a great situation in Philadelphia there between the team and Zach Ertz, or at least doesn't feel like it from the outside. No, totally. And then to your point about Miami, I mean, you listen. Miami is talent deficient, right? I mean, they played Gutty last year played inspired, but they've got Devontae Parker, they signed Will Fuller, they have Gesicki. I actually feel better about the core of the Dolphins pass catchers than I do about the Eagles. Kyle Pitts makes either of those teams better. Same with Jamar Chase, same with Devonta Smith. Listen, feels like the Dolphins have been rumored to be one of the teams that potentially could be in on Travis Etienne or Najee Harris. But that feels early to take either one of those guys.
Yeah, way too
early. Personally. Yeah, I mean, anyway, so it'd be interesting to see what happens with Miami and Philadelphia. Here's a question that I'll ask you. Okay. I find you to talk about the fact that people are bailing on Tua too early, and I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that statement. I think it is way too early to throw in the towel on Tua. First year off of the injury, this is a guy that prior to his injury was being talked about in the same breath that people are now talking about Trevor Lawrence. And, the tanking for Tua was a legit joke. Having said that, you guys know me as a Washington football fan, right? People did not understand why Washington traded all the assets they had to draft RG3 second overall. And then in the fourth round still took Kirk Cousins that same year. And that ended up working out. As we just talked about, they're going to pay $25 million to Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners are going to take a quarterback this year. Could the Dolphins, Field Yates, take another quarterback? Just because, you know what? Quarterbacks are an asset in the NFL. Yeah. And it, whether Tua works out or not, like, that's an asset that you can have.
No, because they've priced themselves. They've pushed too far back in the draft order now. They're not going to be a quarterback there at pick 12. It's the five quarterback. Let's be clear. Number one pick, Trevor Lawrence. Number two pick, a quarterback. Number three pick, a quarterback. Almost assuredly, three quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3 to start the draft. And I'd be stunned if another quarterback makes it past the Carolina Panthers at pick 5. And I'm sorry, pick 8. And that's presuming the Falcons could certainly take a quarterback. The Broncos could take a quarterback. You're going to have trade ups. So I would be stunned if the Dolphins move back to 12, a quarterback falls there and they take one. This to me was a flare being sent up to sort of confirm what you guys just said. Hey, we need Tua to have a year. Like maybe he is not going to ultimately be a great player in the NFL. Who knows? But a year ago, a year and a half ago, we were talking about tanking for Tua. And the best way to break a guy's confidence is by using another first-round pick on him, like on a quarterback.
Right. That would just to be clear, though, Field, you keep saying 12. The Eagles have 6. I mean, the Dolphins have pick 6.
Okay, I don't know why I keep saying that. That's my apologies there.
Because no. They moved.
Yes, they moved. That's right, because of all the movement.
Dolphins
but no,
were
I don't,
involved in both trades. But
no, the answer is still no. The answer is still no. That's a mistake by me.
But here's what I think. I think that – first of all, I love Flores. I love what they're doing in Miami. Like, if I'm picking another organization where I really like the moves that they're making, it's Miami. Basically, over the last
another year. Organization for you to root for, Miami. You can say it. It's fine. You love the bandwagon. Absolutely. You went to school in Miami. So why not add the Dolphins to the many teams you root for?
Anyway, so I think
especially now that they're on the way up.
I think that the plan here has been to continue to bolster Tua in that offense. As we've talked about, they signed Will Fuller. They brought in some other receiving weapons, but why not get him one from Alabama that he knows really well? Mm-hmm. And why not get him somebody that he used to throw to that he's really comfortable with as one more person in that offense, as one more weapon in that offense? I think they made this move to get a wide receiver there. And, so what if they have this superfluous number of pass catchers there?
I don't even know that I'm not even sure you call it superfluous, right? Like they've got one or two that you kind of trust. What do you got, Daniel? I saw you raising your hand here.
Yeah, I just got a question about this. Obviously, as a Lions fan, I would love it if the Dolphins took one of the Alabama wide receivers so that maybe Jamar Chase could fall to the Lions at 7. However, I just wanted to quickly talk about Kyle Pitts because he is a tight end in all sense of the word, but he's basically just a pass catcher. Yeah, he is a big wide receiver. And so for our fantasy game, I've been thinking about this field with you and I working on the First Draft podcast. Excuse me. You know, is he a guy that's going to come in given the role that he plays and is going to be a, you know, one of those rare rookie tight ends that could actually have an impact in first year in fantasy, given the idea that he's more of a big wide receiver than he is a quote tight end.
Yeah, I think so. And for those that haven't checked out the First Draft podcast, we certainly would encourage you to do so. And Mel Kiper Jr., who we know is the godfather of the NFL draft industry, he started what we now call draft analysis. He's been doing this for 43 years. He's been at ESPN for 35. He's been doing it since he was like 16 years old. He has Kyle Pitts with a higher grade than any other tight end he's ever evaluated. So, and I get it. People sometimes overdo things during the pre-draft process. We speak in hyperbole. These are just great, right? Like Mel has a system he's had for 43 years. It's not like he altered the system to inflate Kyle Pitts' value and ability. He's got him number two on his big board overall. At one point, he had him going number two to the Jets in a mock draft. Maybe it was four in a trade back, but still, the guy is special, special. So no doubt, Daniel, that a big part of it will be the landing spot, as will be the case with Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith. But you throw Kyle Pitts, put him in Cincinnati at pick 5. Love what he could do there with the Bengals and Joe Burrow. So I'll just put a wrap on the trade, by the way. I know we have a few questions.
Can we take 1 minute just to appreciate the fact that Mel Kiper Jr. has been at ESPN? You said he's been doing this for 43 years, right? He's been at ESPN for how long?
36, I believe. This is 36th draft coming up.
36 years he's been at ESPN and still has better hair than me. Very upsetting.
Yeah, totally.
Very, very upsetting.
Not only that, can I take 1 more minute to talk about Mel for a second? And Todd, I'll lump them in this together. The passion that those guys have for their craft is unbelievably inspiring. They love, I mean, Daniel and I obviously do the show with them every Tuesday. But before the show gets started, Mel is the kind of person, well, Mel and I are kindred spirits. He shows up to the show at like 1:15 for a 2 o'clock recording. And he'll sit there and talk about prospects for 45 minutes, right? He's just like, it's like, Mel, we should just record the pre-show meetings and just make a second podcast out of that. Todd and Mel.
Has he talked to you about the pumpkin pie, though?
Oh, everything you need to know about pumpkin pie, Mel has divulged. I know so much about his life through our pre-show meetings, which are always a blast. So again,
he's a wonderful human being, one of my favorites.
Mel is a legend in every sense of the word. There's no question.
Those two just make a Tuesday afternoon enjoyable every week for us. Last couple thoughts I would say about this trade that I think is really interesting from Philly's standpoint, because I love the process part of it, right? Like acquiring an extra first round pick to move down 6 spots is just good, smart football business. So that part I'm in on. I will be much more in if they can still land one of the top 4 pass catchers that I've just been referencing. Kyle Pitts, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, and Jamar Chase. So I think Jamar Chase, long gone by pick 12. Kyle Pitts, I believe, is long gone by pick 12. I don't know that either Alabama wide receiver makes it there. We'll see. I do think one of them will be there. If they land one of those players, I'm all in. I'm a little nervous, though, that they could leave the first round with either another wide receiver who is further down our rankings or a different position altogether. And I really, really, really need to address that wide receiver spot there in Philly. That much is for certain. All right, Daniel, we have a few mailbag questions that I think maybe are just more direct fantasy. So you want to fire away with our, I can also ask them too, but go ahead, Daniel.
Gary K wants to know, how bad are the Saints going to suck this year with so many key losses due to the cap? Who's going to throw to Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara? And I thought this was an interesting question, maybe the less part about how much they're going to suck, but the idea that Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, obviously, you know, would they be projected for a slight downgrade given their quarterback situation moving on from Drew Brees?
I'll, you know, Field, you can take, first off, I don't think the Saints are going to suck. I mean, listen, I think that division, I don't think the Saints are going to suck at all. And, but I mean, it's obviously a tough division. They've got the Super Bowl winner in their division. And, you know, Carolina's improving as well. So I don't think they're going to suck, but they're certainly going to have their work cut out for them. Listen, all due respect to Drew Brees, who is a no-brainer first ballot Hall of Famer and one of the all-time greats at the position. But Drew Brees wasn't Drew Brees in capital letters last year, okay? And he actually hasn't been for, like, I feel like the last 2 years. Like, there's been a slight drop-off in Drew Brees' game. I think for the purposes that we care about, I think that Jameis Winston will be the starter, the Saints. I think there'll be a handful of packages for Taysom Hill that will be annoying for fantasy managers of both Winston and other players. And we certainly saw last year where Kamara's value dipped when Taysom Hill was the starting quarterback, because sometimes he would keep it. But do I think you are in any draft where people know what they're doing, where Alvin Kamara gets past pick five? I do not. I just don't.
I just got to say, I don't want to interrupt too much, but it's March 30th. And I don't know why people are talking about this as Jameis Winston's job to lose. Like, the same situation happened last year, and Taysom Hill was the starter. Like, I think we need to very much prepare ourselves for the possibility that this is a competition at best right now for Jameis, and at worst, it could be Taysom Hill's job again. I'm just putting that one. That's my March 30th call.
I guess my only pushback to that, and maybe I'm wrong on that, but I feel like that if that were the case, if they felt like Taysom Hill really could be the, I guess I'm maybe it's more about Winston. Mm-hmm. I feel like the quarterback situation in the NFL is so brutal that it feels, I mean, Andy Dalton's going to be a starter next year. Mm-hmm. It feels like Jameis Winston could have had a better opportunity to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And that he doesn't come back to the Saints. He doesn't come back to the Saints unless he knows that he's going to be the guy, or a pretty good chance to be the guy. Listen,
last year to be a starter.
I know. That's the thing. He didn't have other options. So I don't.
Last year he didn't. He had to sign a 1 year deal. You know, he had to sign a 1 year, whatever.
Right. So what I'm saying is that last year when you know, there were a lot of teams that needed quarterbacks this year, like Chicago, like Washington, New England, that just said, yeah, we're good. You know, I don't know. The point is, or the question, I guess, was not about whether we think Jameis or Taysom will be the starter. And obviously, if Taysom does end up winning the job, it has a legit fantasy impact on Alvin Kamara. I'm just floating the idea that on Tuesday, March 30th, I'm not convinced Jameis is the starter when so many people keep talking about, like, Saints starting quarterback Jameis Winston.
Listen, that caution is absolutely fair, and I agree with that, Field. I agree with that it is not official. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that if you asked me right now, gun to my head, pick a quarterback for the Saints, I'm taking Jameis over Hill. If I had to handicap it, if I had to bet on it, if I had to draft one ahead of the other, I would probably draft Jameis over Taysom Hill. But you're absolutely right that there is a chance that there's certainly a chance that it's Taysom Hill's job next year. Or they do some sort of weird, you know, off on, you know, one series on, one series off, or, you know, they take turns. It may be a mess. I will say that to answer this guy's question, if Taysom Hill's the starter, it certainly would affect Alvin Kamara, but he'd still be a top 10 fantasy running back versus maybe not a top five, but he'd still be a top 10 guy. And I think Michael Thomas actually represents – Michael Thomas is going to go like in the third round of drafts this year and still catch like 95 balls.
Yeah, we'll see.
Like, people are going to be like – people are going to be out on Michael Thomas. No Drew Brees. He was hurt. He burned me last year. Screw it. And you're just going to be like – he's still the focal point of that offense. He's still a great wide receiver. Like, he's still going to get 150 targets by the end of the year. I don't know. Like, Stefan, do you have any concerns about Michael Thomas health-wise coming into this year?
Not really, but I'm going to want to see him in the preseason because obviously he had a procedure late. We never saw him really healthy.
Yeah, I think he's going to be one of the most fascinating players to discuss going into the season for all the reasons that Matthew has already brought about, and then obviously the uncertain quarterback situation. All right, Daniel, one or two more I believe we have in the mailbag. What else do you
have? Yeah, let's do one more. Just before the podcast started, we got news. that Matthew's favorite running back in the NFL, Kalen Ballage, was signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I am curious about the fantasy breakdown of that signing.
Matthew, I mean, this is your beast, baby. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is top three too high? Top four for Kalen Ballage? Like, it's McCaffrey or Ballage, I feel like.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, anyway, yeah, Pittsburgh better get ready for a Ballage barrage, you know?
You've been waiting.
Big Ben
about
ready to check into the Ballage Mahal.
Mm. He tweeted that like 15 minutes ago. He just wanted to say it live on the podcast.
Yeah, of course. Jokes aside, I think, first off, the long, strange trip of Kalen Ballage in the NFL continues. And for somebody that seemed to completely wash out in Miami, and you're like, why is this guy even in the league? He played well last year for the Chargers. Honestly, like he was fantasy relevant last year for the Chargers, and he legitimately played well. Like, was he great? No. His efficiency, you know, still a little bit low, but like he was reasonably productive. And I think from a landing spot place, like there's opportunity in Pittsburgh. There's the potential for opportunity. Like, look, James Conner is not on the team. He's a free agent. So we'll see what happens with James Conner. But at the moment, he's competing with Benny Snell and Anthony McFarland and I guess Jalen Samuels on some level for touches in that Steelers backfield. The Steelers are likely to take a running back in this draft as well. So I think, you know, the story isn't completely written, but I don't think anything that we saw out of Anthony McFarland or Benny Snell last year made the Steelers feel like, or any fans feel like, oh yeah, the Steelers have their running back. I still like Anthony McFarland and I still think there's a chance for him, but like, you know, I don't think there was anything that we saw last year that made you feel like, you know, there's a franchise running back on the Steelers right now. And I still don't think there is. I'm not saying Kalen Ballage is that guy, but let's see how the draft plays out. But is there a chance that Kalen Ballage is the fantasy starter or the most fantasy relevant running back on the Steelers if they don't do anything significant in the draft?
Right.
There is.
Yeah. I think that's the big point though, right? Is that like a month from now, we could very well be talking about like, Najee Harris is going to kill it in Pittsburgh, right?
1,000%. So
it's a fun, like to have some goofiness surrounding a Kalen Ballage news bite. But yeah, I think there's still a very good chance the Steelers consider this a, their top, one of their top positions of need going into the draft is running back still. And I know the team has made some investments there in recent mid rounds in previous drafts. I think there's a chance they could do the exact same thing in the first two rounds this upcoming year. So as mentioned, do us a favor, go check out the First Draft podcast for more thoughts on whether the Steelers or somebody else should use a first round pick on a running back. In the meantime, go find Matthew on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat,
TikTok,
Periscope, Clubhouse.
Not doing Clubhouse. I am on Clubhouse.
Okay.
Matthew Berry TMR on all forms of social. I'm Matthew Berry TMR on all forms of social media except the Fantasy Life app, where I'm merely at Matthew Berry. I am on Clubhouse as well. Field, you and I need to do something on the house. Stefania has joined me.
There we go. Stefania, yeah. And you can find Stefania on Twitter, Stefania_ESPN. What else about on Instagram, StefaniaB87? Have you updated the Instagram?
No, it's Stefania Bell now on Instagram.
Okay. Stefania Bell on Instagram. What else, Stefania?
Clubhouse.
There you go. On Clubhouse. I'm just Field Yates, and you can just listen to me on the podcast. We will talk to you guys next week when we are
April. Field is the best Instagrammer. Stop it.
Field Yates on Instagram. We'll talk to you guys in a week. It'll be April. Draft season will continue.
And coming out soon, I don't know exactly when it's going to publish. I think maybe tomorrow, but coming out soon, we'll have a love-hate, off-season love-hate. So there players that have gone up and down in free agency battles. So be sure to check that out. I'm in the middle of writing it right now.
Love-hate. Can't wait to read that till next Tuesday. We'll talk to you guys in a week.
Peace out.
You're in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus. We'll be right back.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.